Hey everybody, Riley here. I just wanted to say thank you so much for waiting and being patient while we got this episode uploaded. The first half is Pam and I as usual, and the final half is Pam, myself, and Valerie Complex, our guest for this week. We had a little bit of some audio issues, so what follows is not our usual natural conversation flow in the second half. But I hope that it's still enjoyable and that you guys like the episode.
Hello and welcome to Media Mavens. This is episode 34. I'm Pam, and with me, as always, is Riley.
Hello.
Hey, Riley, how are you doing?
I am very well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I am excited for our episode today.
Yeah. It's gonna be a good one.
Yes, our topic of discussion this episode is Wonder Woman, and joining us will be Valerie Complex from Black Girl Nerds. She had a bit of a limited time frame today, so she will just be joining us for the Wonder Woman discussion, not the what we've been up to part. But if you want to hear Wonder Woman, there'll be a timestamp for that. But in the meantime, Riley, what have you been up to since we last recorded?
More of the same, kind of. I've been playing a little bit of HOTS again, so Heroes of the Storm, because they have like a new summer event happening. And there's like a contest going on where if you play and win a game every day, you get an entry into this big draw that they're doing. And one of the prizes, the like big grand prize, is a all expenses trip to BlizzCon,
Oh, wow.
where they like fly you out there, they pay for your tickets, they pay for your hotel, all that stuff. So I tried doing that for the first couple days, and then the second or third day that I played, I just lost every single game.
Oh, no.
So I was like, this is horrific. Because depending on who you get in Heroes of the Storm and who you play with, especially in quick match or quick play, it can be really, really tough. And I feel like, I don't know, it doesn't feel as rewarding as Overwatch does. Because even losing in Overwatch, yeah, okay, like I don't get too, like, bummed out about losing in Overwatch because the games are so fast. But like the losing games that I was playing in Heroes of the Storm were like 40 minutes of just like begging the other team to please end the game. Please go for the core for the love of God. it's just, and I mean, I like Heroes of the Storm, I really do, but it's like the games are just so long. And I just like, let me win one so I get my stupid entry into the stupid contest. Ugh. And then, I mean, other than that, I've been playing Overwatch, of course.
Did you try the PTR at all since they announced
Oh,
Doomfist?
Doomfist. No, I haven't.
No.
Although he looks really cool. And like, all right, so for a hero who like he kind of seems like a mobile, more beefy like Genji or Tracer almost, and like his ultimate, from what I've seen, there's no way to stop it. It's like he goes up into the air and he actually like disappears, so like you can't even like Ana sleep him. Which seems really overpowered. Because I've seen people do like team kills with his ult because people just can't, like, there's no way to get away unless you're like already at the edge of the circle. You can move his ultimate after you use it. Like, it looks like those, like the targeting reticle on the screen. So like you come out of the first person view and you can see and like direct where you want the ult to go. And I was like, okay. So I feel like he's gonna be extremely frustrating to play against. But people were saying that Orisa is actually like his hard counter. Like,
oh.
But she was released first. So people are like, it's kind of a weird order, but he's the one who, or she is the one who would be like the counter to him because she's like immovable and got the shield and stuff. And I was like, sure, whatever, dude. Like, he just seems so overpowered that I don't know what to say. But I'm like, I want to play him, but at the same time, I don't want to play him because, like, I'm not good with Genji to begin with. I'm kind of good with Tracer, but I don't know. I feel like he would pair really good with, like, Zarya, and I play Zarya a lot, so that'd be a good mix.
Get someone else to play him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, somebody else has to get good at Doomfist. And then apart from Hots and Overwatch, I finally finished the 100.
Nice.
And oh my god, what a garbage show.
What a garbage show. Oh my god, thank you. I've been waiting to talk about this for like weeks now. So first spoiler warning for the end of season 4. Yeah, that was garbage. Like, it was so bad on so many levels. Like, I'm so sick of the like, oh, this character's gonna die. Yep. Nope, just kidding, they're fine.
Yep.
And like also the
last minute saving them, it's like, please stop.
Yeah, like, ugh, it's just like, and they did a time jump, which is the second time they've done a time jump, isn't it? I'm pretty sure they did one before when Clark like went off on her own and dyed her hair red the last time.
Yeah, like, they did.
So, but this time it was like a 5 or 6 year time jump.
6 years, I think, because it's over. So, like, they go up into space successfully. The six whatever people, they go up into space, and then it like ends with them being on the space station, but then it's not over because then we get a flash forward, like 5 years or whatever, to Clark, who is waiting for them to come down from space. And she's like, it's past like the time period that they said they would need to be in space. And so she's like, where are you guys, kind of deal.
And she's with some little girl. That, who the hell knows who that is?
Yeah. So I don't know what is like what the deal is. And then like it kind of ends with like, it's like a prison transport, and I was like, "Are you like, are you shitting me? We're just going back to like the 100 at the very beginning." Like, no, come on.
Yeah, I was so mad. The whole thing with Clark about how the Nightblood didn't work; she's still susceptible to the radiation. And then like she was outside when the fire came, but then it's like, no, she's fine. Yeah, it's all right.
She literally gets caught in the like wave of nuclear blast, and then she's fine 5 years later. Like, fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
So frustrating. Like, that would have been such a good sacrifice too, like a perfect note to like end her character on, because she's like trying to figure out this stupid satellite dish. No, so frustrating. Like, just oh god. And like, I want to like punch Jaha in the face, and I want to punch like all of them. I want to like just roll through there and be like, you're stupid, you're stupid, punch. And just like
And then the, I forget her name, but she was the one who was with, like, the Ice King.
Oh, Echo.
Echo, and how she was gonna, like, kill herself.
Yeah.
And then she didn't, and it was just like, ugh, just let them all die.
I'm gonna keep watching for, like, hate watching reasons, but, like, now it's, like, a genuine hate watch, because I'm like, I can't believe all of this crap, like... It was so good. Yeah. The first couple seasons were so good, and then it just, like, went down into the toilet.
Yep. Yep.
What a horrible show. It's so bad. God, it makes me so angry. And, like, I don't want to get introduced to new characters. I don't want that. I want, like, the same. And I want, or I want them to, like, all die. Or just have it end. I don't want new.
There's enough characters as it is, even though it's always come in under the guise of, like, there's not that many left. Like, there was only 100, and then the people from the Ark came. Hmm. But they keep killing off, like, large amounts of people, like, hundreds of people.
Yeah.
And there's just always more.
Yeah, like, even though only, like, 1,000 or whatever went into the bunker, like, and everybody else died, in theory, like,
Yeah, it's just gotten to the point where, like, I don't care. Like, when they were, when they gassed everyone and sorted out the bunker because everyone was unconscious, and I was just like, I don't care.
Yeah.
Who doesn't get to also, be in the bunker.
Like, finally. Like, just, yeah. These people are putting up, like, you know, a ridiculous fight because obviously not everybody's going to fit in the bunker and it's, like, the peaceful solution, like, blah, blah, blah. But just gas them and pick people.
Yeah.
God. Ugh. So, I finally finished that. And then I watched Okja, the, like, Netflix movie by Bong Joon-ho. He's a South Korean film director, and he did Snowpiercer, is, like, his main big one, and this new movie, Okja, which is, like, it's, like, I guess the closest it would be is, like, a commentary and, like, a pretty, I wouldn't say, like, a big critique, but it's, like, a critique of kind of how we act towards, like, the animals that we get our food from. Because Okja, so the name of the movie is actually the name of the super pig character. And basically, like, they kind of go through, there's, like, mention of, like, they send, like, 10 different pigs to 10 different farms, and they're gonna pick, like, the best pig and bring it back to New York, I think, and like, show it off and be like, this is what the super pigs can be, like, they can be, like, this big thing, and they're supposed to, like, you know, produce minimal waste and require, like, minimal like, food and care to keep them alive. And so it's, like, basically, like, cheap and easier like, meat, basically, instead of, you know, like, actual pigs. And it's, I thought it was really good. There were parts of it that were really uncomfortable to watch. So if you're going to be watching this movie, I would say, I guess, just, like, get ready for that. There's, like, slaughterhouse scenes that are, could be worse, I think, but they are pretty bad. And then there's, like, I don't even know how to talk about it. There's, like, a point where... Actually, no, that's going to spoil it big time. The timestamp is 1 hour and 10 minutes into the movie where they bring Okja into the slaughterhouse area. So, like, that whole, like, the last, I don't know, 45 minutes of the movie is, like, really, really tough to watch. But I thought it was really well done, like, overall. And I didn't realize that they filmed, like, all of that movie on location, basically. So there's scenes that were filmed in South Korea, and there's scenes that were filmed in New York, and then there's scenes that were filmed, some of it was in Vancouver, too. But yeah, it was really good. It doesn't make me not want to eat meat. because I find, like, because it was, like, a fictional pig, like, these super pigs, like, they are not real, obviously, so it's, like, okay, but, it is important, I think, for people to know, like, where your food comes from, and how the animals are treated, how, like, the conditions that they're kept in, and, you know, do your best to eat meat that is, you know, farmed, like, sustainably, and, you know, takes care of the animals, because, like, just because you're eating them doesn't mean you should treat them like garbage.
Yeah.
But yeah, It was a good movie. I cried like a baby. Like the last like 45 minutes. So yeah, it was like very reminiscent of like my feelings at the end of Train to Busan, where like I was also crying like a baby. And I was like, I don't know what it is with South Korean movies, but like they're killing me. It's so like this like huge emotional roller coaster. And they have like really good actors in it, actors and actresses. Like Tilda Swinton is the CEO of the meat company. And Steve Yeun from Walking Dead is one of the characters from the Animal Liberation Front. Who else is in it? I think Jay Baruchel. And Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. And his character was actually kind of like, I think maybe the most impressive. Like his acting was, I didn't even know it was him at first. He plays like this really over the top like animal TV show host who ends up being like the spokesperson for this meat company. And so you kind of see how it changes like his attitude towards animals, because he's like, I'm supposed to love animals and now I work in this place that is a slaughterhouse. So that's like his character, I think, is really interesting. And then the young girl that plays the main character, An So-hyun, she was really good too. And like, it's interesting because like half the movie is basically in Korean and half of it is in English, because the main character doesn't speak English at all. So it's like two different cultures and languages kind of like meeting up. And then I read a really good like article about the importance of like being able to understand each other, because there's some really cool shit that happens with the translation of the Korean and English in this movie. And it's like, I actually picked up some of it and was like, well, I must have heard it wrong, but then I read it later and it was like, no, this was a purposeful thing that was done. So like the subtitles don't match sometimes, which is kind of interesting. I shouldn't keep going on. I feel like I've been talking for a long time about it, but it was really good. And I would say I recommend it. I just think, like, if you're sensitive at all to anything that happens to animals in that situation, I would say maybe avoid some of it or look up some of the content warnings to make sure that that's something that, that you could handle, because it is like super heavy material, but it is a really good movie. So
yeah, I have to decide if I want to watch that. It looks good, but I'm also a big wimp when it comes to animal things. What you were talking about the language, I actually read an article with Stephen
Yeun.
And he sort of touched on that, about he thought his role was one that could only be played by a Korean American, and like there's a lot of stuff in it that's like having understanding of both is sort of like an important part of the movie. And then the article is actually just really good in general. He talks a lot about Glenn on The Walking Dead and what he thought about that, and just sort of some of the struggles of an Asian American actor in general.
Let's put that in the show notes, because I want to read that too.
Okay.
And last but not least, I went to KCON New York.
Yay!
And I don't want to say too much about it, but that's why our recording schedules have been kind of so weird. Like, the last one especially was done at a really weird, really weird time. And then, like, even a couple times before that, I feel like, you know, KCON and like KCON here and then KCON there has been kind of like screwing things up, but it was really cool. And if anybody else wants to hear about it, you can hit me up on Twitter, because I'll talk I'll talk for a long, long time about it.
Is that it for you?
Yeah, that's it. Don't want to talk anymore.
All right, so I've been playing a few things. Microsoft made this new basically like their own Twitch thing. Oh. I don't even, oh, Mixer, I think it's called. And they had this thing where if you watched the Microsoft E3 press conference on Mixer, you would get a prize of some kind. Hmm. So the prize was Rare Replay, which is, I think, 30 games made by Rare that were like remastered and put out for Xbox One. So one of those was Viva Pinata, which is a game I played quite a while ago. It's like a garden simulator, basically, except you're attracting animals that are pinatas. Oh. So, like, you plant different flowers and trees, and then certain pinatas are attracted to them, and they can come visit your garden. And if you fulfill certain requirements, they'll live in your garden, and then you can breed them, and you can sell them, you can dress them up. So it was really, it's a really cute game. I had a lot of fun with it. I played a ridiculous amount over a couple days and got myself up to being a legendary gardener. And, yeah, it's just super cute. There's like, as I got higher level, I saw some cooler pinatas. Like there was like an elephant pinata and it looked like a baby elephant, but it was still like gigantic compared to all my other things. And there's little ants and, everything has a name that makes it sound like candy of some kind, like bees or buzzle gums. Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah, it's really cute. And you can like feed them different things, like different flowers or seeds, and they'll change color. Like, so you can, they can be pink or green or like, so it's really cute. I had a lot of fun playing that. There was also the Steam sale recently, so I bought a ton of just sort of smaller games, and the best one I've played is called What Remains of Edith Finch, and it's like a walking simulator game where you're playing this 17-year-old girl, and she's going back to her childhood house that she hasn't been in a few years, and the Finch family is cursed, or people think they're cursed because everyone meets an untimely death. So she goes back to her house and every bedroom has been locked up, so you have to find like passageways into people's rooms, and then once you find someone's room, it starts like this little thing where you play as them for a little bit and you see sort of how they died. And it's really neat because for every story it kind of does its own little mechanical thing, like the gameplay is a little different for each one. One of the first ones, and you don't really totally find out how she died. She's a young girl, if she starved or if she was sick, but she turns into an animal. Like she turns into a cat and she goes off chasing a bird to eat, and then she turns into a shark and then she goes off chasing fish, and then she turns into a sea monster and she eats humans. And it's really cool how they changed up how the game plays for each of the stories. So I really liked it. I know there's been a lot of sort of walking sim games, and some of them are kind of boring, but this one was really good. Like, if you like Gone Home and stuff like that, I think you'd really like this. So it's very well written, and the voice acting is really good. So
awesome.
Yeah. Other than that, I watched MasterChef Canada, the last season of it. And I complained a bit about it on Twitter and just like how bad it is compared to MasterChef Australia. First of all, the Canadians they picked were the worst. Like, oh, I didn't like most 80% of the people. I just didn't like. They were ugh. And just like they do the American thing where they just try to play people off against each other and create drama that's not about the food. Like on group challenges, each group has a leader and the losing group goes in front of the judges and the judges are all like, "Hey, group leader, what if you had a chance to save yourself, would you?" And then they have to explain why they would or wouldn't save themselves. And then everyone hates them if they want to save themselves. But then I think they're stupid if they don't save themselves.
Yeah, seriously. Take the chance, obviously.
Yeah, and just there's so many times where you can either save yourself like that, or if you win, you get to just not cook. So I feel like the people in these shows, especially compared to Australia, where there's like 5 episodes a week, yeah, they barely cook anything. So it was not very good. And I think they only started off with the top 10, so it was only 10 or 12 episodes. So it just wasn't good. I had just run out of Australia episodes to watch.
That's so, like, ugh, I hate that, like, the North American shows like that are so, like, competitive and, like, cutthroat, yeah, almost, but it's, like, all manufactured. Mm-hmm. Because, like, then you look at, like, MasterChef Australia or even, like, the Great British Bake Off, where, like, people are, like, actually nice to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, in the Australian one, it's getting, they're at like the top 8 or something now where I am, and they're just so supportive, and everyone is like just always cheering each other on and like crying when someone gets eliminated, and they're all just so nice, and the judges are nice, so yeah, MasterChef Canada was bad. I also binged watched Glow.
I've heard good things about that.
Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling. It was pretty good. I liked it. I kind of didn't know what to expect, but I liked it. It was pretty funny. It had I forget everyone's names now. What's your name from Community?
Is that Brie?
Allison Brie. Oh, okay. Yeah, Allison Brie. She was sort of the main character, and she was really good. And then it also had Betty Gilpin, who I really like. She was in an episode of American Gods, and she was in Nurse Betty. Nurse Jackie. Sorry. Nurse Jackie. Betty is her name. And she's really good. She's like, I don't know, she has this kind of oddness to her. Like, she's super attractive and, like, looks like just this, like, all-American, blonde, blue-eyed girl, which is what they sort of use in the wrestling show as her character. But she's just kind of got this, like, this odd thing about her that makes me really like her. So it was a pretty good show. It had a really large, diverse cast, and it was neat because I really don't know much about wrestling at all. And then the last thing I mentioned last time, I had started listening to a podcast called The Bright Sessions. And since then, I have listened to the entire series. Oh. So all 2 or 3 seasons they have of it. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. It sort of kept going on that track of the psychologist helping out people with superpowers, basically. And then as it goes on, you find there's this big corporation that's researching the people with the superpowers, and they are sort of involved with the psychologist in some way, and it gets very interesting, and it has a lot of really good character development, so it was good to listen to.
Cool.
And that's about it for what I've been doing. So I guess we can move on to our main topic, which is Wonder Woman. And with us to talk about it is Valerie Complex. Welcome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
My name is Valerie Complex, and I love anime and do a lot of writing. I've written for Black Girl Nerds and Hypeable and The Odyssey. But you'll also see my work at The Nerdist, IGN, Geek and Sundry. If you Google me, you'll see a lot of my work.
Awesome. All right. So we're here to talk about Wonder Woman. And I guess people probably mostly know, but she's a DC comic book superhero who first debuted in 1941. And she just had her long-awaited debut on the big screen in the Wonder Woman movie. So I guess to start off, just any first impressions of the Wonder Woman movie? How did you feel about it coming out of the theater? Riley, you want to take it?
I loved it. For me, like, I thought it was great. Like, I spent like half the movie like crying because I was like, she's so awesome. But yeah, I've been pretty vocal about how much I love it. But I mean, I've been, you know, reading some critiques and stuff of it. And so after, I want to watch it again with like a more like critical eye now that I've gotten like my emotional feelings out about it. I want to kind of go back and watch it again because I feel like there's probably quite a bit that I, you know, didn't see just because I, you know, don't even think about it.
Yeah, I liked it. It sort of depends what context you look at it in. Like, as a DC movie, it's great. As a superhero movie, it's pretty good. I think there were some things I really loved about it, like how Gal Gadot just seemed to be having so much fun. Like, a lot of superheroes can be kind of dour, and this, like, she seemed like she was enjoying herself as she was, you know. But I really liked it. I thought it had a pretty straightforward three-act thing, and some acts were better than others. Mm-hmm. I loved, in a way, the stuff in the beginning with the Amazons, but I also feel like there was some wasted opportunities there. Like, I kind of wish they had gotten more into that rather than using that as a sort of, like, a big exposition dump. And then Hippolyta just saying, "No fighting, Diana," like 700 times. I kind of wish they had gotten more into the Amazons and their way of life.
I think the film could have been better in a lot of aspects. I thought there was too much Steve Trevor. He was in the first, he comes in after 15 minutes, after the film starts, and 15 minutes before it's over. So he pretty much has 2 hours of screen time. Every scene that Diana is in, he's in, and it really annoyed me. It annoyed the shit out of me, actually. And we don't get a good sense of her true character until the very end. I thought Antiope, I think that's how you pronounce her name, was the best part of the movie. And in many ways, she was better than Diana. Zack Snyder's footprint is really all over the film, and it really irks my nerves, especially the very last fight scene. It was very CGI and not natural at all. I don't know what happened to the queer aspect. I know Diana being queer is canon now in the comics, but in the film, it just didn't make sense that they didn't show any obvious affection or love between the women on an island full of women. Nobody's fucking each other. That doesn't make any sense at all. And they didn't show any of that.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm glad that they put something about the queer stuff in there. Like she did mention, like, men are unnecessary for pleasure. But yeah, I think they definitely could have. It was all just very small hints, like Antiope's, the woman running over to Antiope after she was mortally wounded. And it's like, is that a girlfriend? Maybe. It's not really going to say. Yeah. Like. And I think that's as part of the bigger problem, where they didn't really go into the Amazons that much other than to just sort of set up the story.
I wish we got like a whole movie on the island, and then the last like 15 minutes is her being like, okay, I'm good to go now. I'm ready to leave.
Yeah. And then the other stuff you were saying about Steve, I did notice in sort of the second act when Diana goes to London and she's trying to figure out how the world outside of Themyscira works. A lot of the comedy, and I'll preface this by saying, like, I did laugh at it all, but it was just like, oh, look at her. She's a woman doing something that women don't generally do. I did like the kind of fish out of water thing. And I think part of it was just the actress and how utterly charming she is. And she could sell a poor script, I think.
I mean, Gal Gadot's fine. I'm sure she's just, you know, sitting around hoping that this thing didn't implode, and probably would have taken any amount of money that they gave her just to be a part of it. I mean, it's huge. Gal Gadot went from a small supporting role in the Fast and Furious series to being Wonder Woman. I mean, that's huge. I hope it didn't fall apart, too. And don't blame her for holding on for dear life.
Who would you have rather seen in the role?
I think if I had the chance to choose an actress over Gal Gadot, because I know she wasn't Patty Jenkins' first choice, and she wasn't mine. She wasn't even on my radar. Was Gina Carano. I know a lot of people said she couldn't act, and she couldn't, but she had the look and she had the fight training and everything, and I really liked, I like the way she looks on screen. She really reminds me of Wonder Woman. The other person who I really wanted, because I thought that they were going with a more seasoned Diana, someone who would be older, because Batman and Superman are kind of older. I thought they would go with someone like actress Lynn Collins. A lot of people don't know who she is, and she kind of fell off the radar after the movie she was in. She was in John Carter, which I like, by the way, but whatever. She would have been a really good actress for that, I think.
Riley, was there anyone you sort of had in mind for this role, or?
No, I don't really know Wonder Woman well enough, I think. Like, I haven't, like, read any of the comics or seen any of the old shows, so I, like, went into it with nothing. So I can't even, like, speculate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough about her, I don't think.
Yeah, when I'm thinking about it, I'm just sort of thinking about, like, physical body type, which is probably, you know, not the thing that goes into casting directors' minds, or it might be, but probably not in the same way. So so going back to the movie a little bit, how did you feel about the fighting scenes in particular?
As the film got closer to the end, the fight scenes progressively got worse. The beginning fight scene was really cool with the Amazons on Themyscira. I thought that was cool, but it was also weird because Amazons train their whole life for combat. It was just weird to see them get killed by bullets, and I know that reasoning sounds off, but there's no way that they could have deflected them somehow. What are the shields for? I don't know. Anyway, as you know, there's the great fight scene with the bell tower and Diana sort of doing her thing. That was really cool. But at the end with the CG, it was like CGI overload, her showing all that brute strength as opposed to natural fighting, a thing which she can do, kind of cheapened the Wonder Woman experience. It was just weird how Ares was putting himself together with the shrapnel, giving himself a shrapnel armor.
Yeah, there was a lot of issues with, I think the third act was definitely the weakest part of the movie. All the stuff with Ares, first of all, I didn't buy Ares, like, at all. And then, I don't know, the fight scene was just, like, people throwing shit at each other repeatedly. It's just like, I'll throw a tank at you, now I'll throw this big piece of metal at you. And it's just like, okay, you can throw heavy things. Like, we get it. But, yeah. So, go ahead.
Ares, I don't know, that actor, I don't even know his name. What a mess. Such a disappointment. Once again, DC doesn't know what to do with villains or how to create good ones. I would have preferred a more natural fight. Okay, sure, we can show brute strength, but when all that's run its course, let's see what you can do with a sword and shield, and can you really fight it out? I think they really missed an opportunity there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like maybe they were trying to go with, you know, the one you'd least suspect, because, you know, throughout the whole game you thought that Ludendorff was going to be Ares, but instead it's this like nerdy man over here.
No way. I was like, no, that dude, I looked at Brian and I was like, no, that dude is the bad guy. It's like, there's no way. Because he's played like a bad guy in, I don't know, do you remember like Dragonheart, I think it was? Or like,
I haven't seen that one.
He plays like that creepy bad guy in that movie, and I was like, oh man, he's the bad guy in this one too. Yeah, it felt, I don't know, it felt like really heavy-handed. I liked when he was like smoky, like kind of like when he wasn't actually there. Because then as soon as he appeared and did that like armored, somebody on Twitter I saw, they were like some Dark Souls bullshit boss. I was like, yeah, that's kind of what he ended up being. I wish he was more kind of like the purple guy from Jessica Jones, like more like, I don't know, in your mind, like kind of spooky kind of thing.
So I think the other main problem with the third act was that Steve ended up driving all of Diana's character development and realizations there. I felt like it happened twice. And the worst thing was that it happened twice. Like, if it had happened once, it would have been like, okay. But it was like, oh, he said, I love you. Here's one burst of strength. Mm. Oh, he's dead. Here's another. Like you get one, Steve. You don't get both of them.
Yeah, I kind of wish that she, like, I don't know, that he didn't do that big, like, sacrifice thing.
I'm so torn because I never really liked Chris Pine. Like, he's always my least favorite of the Chrises, but this actually made me like him more, while at the same time wishing he was in it less. So...
Chris Pine is okay, but I saw the film a second time with a friend, and he didn't like Chris Pine. I just thought they tried to force this false sense of objectification. Like, look, here's the man being objectified. You should be happy. And it really wasn't like that at all. Diana was belittled by him, and he never believed her, and almost like he tried several times to overpower her when... You know, she's the goddess of war. How is that possible? I thought that was just kind of crap.
So we have a listener question from Yusuf Cole, who is YumiYu on Twitter. And he agrees the third act is a disappointing final battle style letdown. How would you rewrite it if you had the chance?
Just basically like, I would like to see more, like, of the Amazons being included, whether that's through, like, flashbacks or memories, like, something other than just Steve, basically giving her, like, the strength to beat Ares. Like, I wanted to see more, like, more of her, like, fighting skills, and not just, like you were saying earlier, Pam, like, of her, like, brute strength of throwing a tank at a dude. Like, more stuff with the lasso. Yeah. Would have been really cool. Like, I thought that was, like, the parts with the lasso was, like, the coolest fight stuff, I thought. Where she actually, like, got to use it and swing it around at people. And then, like, I don't know if the Amazons would do this in the comics, but I think it would have been cool to see some of them, like, come up and join her, like, at the end and kind of be like, you know, we believe you, like, we're with you, we're gonna fight this guy or whatever. I think that would have been really neat. And, like, bring it back around to just not being about Steve, because then, I don't know, maybe, like, a lover or her best friend could have, like, come and been part of the battle too, and then we could have seen a little bit more of that, those relationships that she obviously would have built, but we didn't see any.
Yeah, that would have been great. I would have loved to see more Amazon, any excuse for more Amazons, really.
Yeah.
So whether they came back or, as you said, like it was a memory thing. So we've got some more listener questions to go through. One here is from Devoted Pupa, who asks, I love how it's a story with a lot of cliches, but most are well used. Are there any cliches that bothered you?
There's a ton of cliches in this film. I guess the difference between Wonder Woman and anything else is that the cliches are kind of glossed over pretty well. Again, with the objectification of Steve Trevor and what Son of Baldwin talks about in his piece about how they were trying to make him equal to Diana in every sense of the word. Every scene where she's fighting, here he comes doing something else. It was so corny and so cliche to me. Also, trying to convince us that at some point Diana, Wonder Woman, is like a damsel in distress and needs saving, because they never do that for Steve, but it's done for her. I know they try to do it for Steve Trevor, but it just didn't work, and it wasn't really done well. So I thought that was cliche and kind of corny. And of course the fight scenes, like, I mean, we've got to get new writers in there. They need to be more women in writing these scripts, because it's like these men who write these scripts don't know any women. It's just these parts are not written well. They can't even write male objectification properly. It's just not good. I think we just need a change of writers and a change of pace to get something that's not so cliched.
They tried to, like, I can see how they tried to, you know, reverse things, like when he's in the baths and you see him naked and you're like, and that he's like the only character you see naked or like somewhat sexualized in the whole movie, and they tried to do that, but it didn't work that well in a lot of places, because they were still, I don't know, they made sure that Steve was always still like the one in charge, the one who people talk to because he was the man, and so
yeah, he even, like, he had agency all the way to the end, because he decides how he dies too. So, you know, a lot of other damsels don't, like, you can't get the choice to, like, how you're going to get captured or how, like, what's going to happen to you. The next question is from Estelia's Lair.
Do you think it would have been nice to see Dr. Poison get a bit more screen time and some development to her character? Which I think brings up another really good point, that the villains in this are very, very weak. Like, they're not very well developed at all. They're just bad guys.
I would have liked to maybe know a little more about her. Almost wish that she got a different name. Dr. Poison kind of made me, like, laugh aloud in the theater when it was, like, a very serious moment when they were talking about her. I was like, oh yeah, Dr. Poison, I wonder what she does. Good old Dr. Poison. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that name cracks me up.
Yeah, the name and the mask and, like, it was all kind of silly.
Yeah. Although I did see, like, some commentary on how her acting was really good, especially when Steve was talking to her. Mm-hmm. Like, because most of her acting, since the mask covers, like, half her face, the acting was all, like, through her eyes, basically. And they were, like, so I can't remember where I saw it, but they were, like, those, like, really, really well done.
Yeah. I think there's only so much we can do.
Yeah, with what we're given, like, here.
Yeah, for, like, a secondary villain, or maybe even a tertiary villain, if you think about Ludendorff and Ares. I guess we can't expect all that much. So another question is from a Latino lawyer who asks, how did audience engagement rank compared to other movies, and did it affect your enjoyment I know that when I saw this a little bit later, so I saw just like a matinee, and it wasn't a packed theater, so there wasn't a whole lot of audience engagement in my viewing. But did anyone have a particularly boisterous audience they saw it with?
I think my theater was pretty full, and like everybody was kind of like laughing at the same points and like kind of having the same reactions. I don't know. I feel like if I had seen it in a theater with less people, that I probably would have felt the same as I did in a bigger one. I feel like the engagement that we got outside the movie was a little more important, because I didn't see anything leading up to this movie in regards to like discussions happening about how people were excited about it. Like, I didn't see any of that. I didn't see trailers. I didn't see promotional stuff on Twitter. I saw nothing.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, I didn't even know when the movie came out. I had to go and, like, seek it out myself.
Right. Huh.
So, yeah. That was my, like, my main thing. It was not even, like, in the theater. It was outside the theater what happened.
Most of what I saw was a whole bunch of people going, I really hope this is good. I really hope this is good.
Yeah, that too, yeah. I guess going into it with the attitude of like, boy, I hope this doesn't suck.
As for audience engagement, people were pretty quiet. I did have this one group of people. I guess one of the guys knew a lot about the comic book and he kept giving out spoilers. And I wanted to kick him in the throat. But other than that, there wasn't really much going on. The audience just seemed they were enraptured in whatever was going on. And I think a lot of people were just excited to see Wonder Woman on screen and didn't really look at it with a critical eye like I do almost every movie I watch. Sometimes it gets annoying. But not much in the way of audience engagement. That's too bad, though.
All right, so we got another question from @YumiYu on Twitter, and it is, what character would be your number one pick for a new female superhero movie franchise? Yeah, I just want more women superheroes in general. My problem is that since I don't read comics, unless a character has already been in a movie or a show or something, I probably don't know who they are. So
I Squirrel Girl was one of the first ones that came to mind when I saw this question, and then maybe like Ms. Marvel, the younger Ms. Marvel.
Oh yeah.
I think that would be really good. And like you could make like a really good like kids superhero movie, I think. But you'd have to have the right people doing it, obviously, because I think that one would be a little difficult.
So we've gotten the news now that Patty Jenkins has been hired on to direct the sequel, and I'm pretty sure she's also doing like a writing treatment for the sequel. But what kind of things would you like to see in the next Wonder Woman movie?
Feel like more of what we've been talking about, like or less in some cases too. more Amazons. Less like Steve Trevor characters.
What I would like to see in part two, more Themyscira. We need a Themyscira spinoff, or we just need more of the Amazons. We need more of them in their natural habitat. We need more queerness. We need more all of that. And it has to be women-led, women-directed, written by women. We need a little bit more naturalness. The film needs to learn how to not rely so much on CGI and rely more on the actor's ability to be convincing when fighting. Sure, there's going to be some CGI in there, but they need to do better and get their actors up to speed, you know, and the choreography and everything, instead of trying to rely on CGI to make it somewhat believable, because it just takes away from the film and it takes, well, personally takes me out of the movie. I'd also, what I would have liked to have seen in this film, would have liked to have seen a transfer of power of, you know, so in the comics, Diana is the god of war. So now that the god of war is dead, can't there be a transfer of power over to Diana? I would have liked to have seen that as well. So maybe that's something that they can explore in part two. I also would like to see Circe. I would like to see Circe pop up, or maybe Olympia as the antagonist in the next movie. Maybe Maxwell Lord. Something interesting, something other than gods and whatever. It's time to deal with some reality in Wonder Woman, because it's a very real, you know, I know it takes place in Mount Olympus, Greece or whatever, but a lot of it is very real. It's a very real story. So I'd like to see them explore some of that.
Well, I'm hoping that Patty Jenkins has more of a hand in the writing of it this time. Sort of more women writers on it, more women in the production in general, I think would be great. So I guess we'll just go to some final thoughts. Any final thoughts you want to share about Wonder Woman and how you liked it?
I think what we need is less men overseeing this kind of content and more women, more diversity, more intersectionality, because the film isn't wholly intersectional and it isn't wholly diverse. And I think people need to get out of that type of thinking with Wonder Woman. It's a decent film. It can be better. It can be way better. I'm glad that white women enjoy it and like it and see someone who they can look up to, but that can't be said for the rest of us. And I think the film has to embody more of what Diana from the comics is about, instead of trying to recreate this character. Because unfortunately, the Wonder Woman that we see in this film is not the Wonder Woman who we have now. We're not going to see that same woman in Dawn of Justice. She's just as depressing and brooding and dark like the rest of them. And it's so annoying. She's supposed to be the balance between Batman and Superman, and they have them all just exactly the same. So I'd like to see a little bit more difference in there with the character in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Riley?
I was like happy to have finally this like big kind of like blockbuster movie with a woman kind of as the lead, and then, you know, through more discussions about it, it's like, well, there's obviously still some problems, so whether we fix it through, like, instead of having somebody come in and look at it after and be like, okay, here's what we need to fix, we need to be, you know, having people, like Valerie was saying, through, you know, writing in the beginning and catching all of this stuff before it becomes a problem, and, you know, making sure that more women and more people in general can see, like, themselves on the screen, instead of, you know, coming up and being like, well, it was a good movie, except there was, you know, not a lot of diversity after the first, like, 20 minutes. And even the first 20 minutes, it could have been much better, instead of having, like, people as, like, stage dressing, basically. But, yeah, I still, despite all the problems, I still really loved it, and I know. But I'm glad that we're like able to have these discussions about it, because it definitely like opens up my eyes, because I have, you know, tons of privilege not even noticing all of the problems the first go around. So I'm really happy to actually have this opportunity to even talk about it and discuss it with Valerie in particular, and with everybody else that's been writing about it and talking about it. So
yeah for sure. And then my final thoughts, so I really liked it. I did get sort of emotional at scenes like the Themyscira battle and especially the No Man's Land battle, which we didn't really talk about that, but I think that was one of the best parts of the movie, and I love how she just sort of charged in there. She's like, no, I have to do what's right, and just into the battlefield. At the same time, I can see how there's, you know, missed opportunities with Themyscira. I would love to see more of that. And the third act was a bit of a letdown. But overall, I enjoyed it. I think for a superhero movie, it was pretty good. I'd put it not quite at the, like, X-Men level, but I did enjoy it quite a lot.
So thanks once again to Valerie Complex for coming on the show and chatting with us. If you're interested in finding the rest of her work or following her on Twitter or other social medias, you can follow her here.
Ah, yes, Valerie Complex. You can find me on Twitter at Valerie Complex, all one word. You can also find me on Instagram at Valerie_Complex. And I don't have a Facebook. And you can Google me. My work is all over the place. I've written for so many sites, I can't even name all of them. But you'll see my work as it pops up. And I really appreciate you guys having me on the show.
Thank you so much for joining us and talking about Wonder Woman with us.
Yeah, thank you, Valerie.
Riley, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kaleri, it's K-A-L-E-R-I with an underscore, and also on Twitch at twitch.tv/Kaleri. And I noticed, actually, I have some things to say about the people that have been coming to my Twitch channel, because there's one guy in particular who comes, like, every day, and he mentioned that he came because I mentioned my Twitch stream on the podcast.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I was really surprised. So he knew of our podcast first and then came and started, like, hanging out in my Twitch streams. And, like, he's been helping me with a lot of, like, Korean vocabulary and grammar.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so thank you. I can't, it's D-A-D-O-L-D-O-A-L-H, Dole, I think. But he's been, like, really awesome, so thanks.
Awesome. And you can find me on Twitter at Josyla_ or on YouTube, where my channel is called Cannot Be Tamed. And if you've got any feedback or questions for us, you can reach out at mediamavenscast@gmail.com or contact us on Twitter at _mediamavens. There's also a forum for discussion of any of our episodes at cartridgeclub.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Hey everybody, Riley here. I just wanted to let you know that in the actual recording that we did on Saturday, we definitely did not let that X-Men comment slide, but unfortunately it was part of the audio that I had to cut. But I just wanted to reassure everybody that we absolutely roasted Pam.